Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of our newly titled Power Up and Game podcast. My name is Michael Mosley, and I will be hosting today alongside Riley. Hello, Riley. How's it going?
Hey, it's going good. How are you doing, Michael?
So far, so good. I missed our first episode because, oddly enough, that was the week I was actually off. So,
yeah,
you know, I guess to come in on episode 2.
Yeah, we had a good discussion about Elden Ring. It was fun.
Oh, I'm sure it was. And I'm sure you're all happy that you didn't have to hear me whine about not liking or not being into the game. All right, but we love doing deep dive discussions about video games. But we got to get back to talking about video game news. So here's what we have on the docket for today. We'll be talking about The Quarry, a new game from the developers behind Until Dawn. We're talking about GTA 5's update and enhance, and we are air quoting that here, released for the Xbox Series X and S and the PlayStation 5. We're talking about how EA won't have their traditional EA Play Live event this year. We'll be talking about a little thing that I've been going on about every now and again on this podcast, a little indie game called Tunic that has released today as of this recording, and has made its way to Xbox Game Pass day one. And in our main topic, we'll be talking about Starfield, a recent dev video from Bethesda going into a few aspects of the game and more. And we know that there was another PlayStation State of Play today as of this recording. We're actually recording this episode on that day. So that's why we're not talking about State of Play. We may talk about our favorite things from the State of Play next week, and we may not. Again, we'll see how things go. It all just depends on what was shown and if we're interested in any of it. Which, come on, it's a State of Play. You know, we all enjoy PlayStation and Xbox and PC around here. No Switch, though. I don't think we've ever... Have we ever talked about the Nintendo Switch?
I don't know. Maybe just a few times.
Oh yeah, when it comes to Breath of the Wild, I think that's the biggest thing we've talked about. But stepping into our first story, Supermassive reveals a new horror game called The Quarry. Supermassive Games, the developers behind Until Dawn, has announced their new game and has released a synopsis. Reading, when the sun goes down on the last night of summer camp, 9 teenage counselors are plunged into an unpredictable night of horror. The only thing worse than the blood-drenched locals and creatures haunting them are the unimaginable choices you must make to help them survive. Play as each of the 9 camp counselors in a thrilling cinematic tale where every decision shapes your unique story from a tangled web of possibilities. Any character can be the star of the show or die before daylight comes. How will your story unfold? Like Until Dawn, the decisions you make in The Quarry, like Until Dawn, the decisions you make in The Quarry will affect the game's story and the fates of the counselors. And like Until Dawn, The Quarry also features several notable Hollywood stars such as, oh man, this is why you asked me to host, because there are names involved. And I am terrible at this. David Arquette, Brenda Song, Justice Smith, and more. Oh, Brenda Song, that's cool. And I really do hope I said David's name right. Supermassive also revealed more details about the game, including co-op and a movie mode. Here are the details on that. Okay, so you place your faith in up to 7 friends in online play. God, I hope they don't do randoms. Actually, I kind of hope they do. I'm sure that would be fun. where invited players watch along and vote on key decisions, creating a story shaped by the whole group, or play together in a party horror couch co-op experience where each player picks a counselor and controls their actions. You can customize your experience by adjustable difficulty for all gameplay elements. Let players of any skill level enjoy the horror. And if you prefer to watch rather than play, movie modes lets you enjoy The Quarry as a binge-worthy cinematic thriller. Select how you want the story to unfold, kick back, and munch on some popcorn in between the screams. The Quarry is expected to release on June 10th for Xbox Series X, S, Xbox One, PS5, PS4, and PC. Oh my goodness. Okay, so that was a lot within just the first couple of minutes of the show. Riley, what's your take on the quarry?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting this one. It's kind of interesting because it almost feels like a spiritual successor to Until Dawn, which is owned by Sony. That's a Sony IP. It's also interesting because Supermassive is doing the Dark Pictures anthology currently. They've released three games so far, and a fourth one in that kind of anthology series is coming out this year, I believe. And it's kind of interesting because this game doesn't seem to be a part of that. It seems to be a separate thing. So I don't know, that's just kind of interesting, kind of out of left field, something that I wasn't really expecting from Supermassive. I like the idea of being able to play with friends, and either they can actually play or they can vote on the decisions that are made. That sounds like a lot of fun. And also the idea of being able to watch it as a movie is interesting. I wonder if it'll be something like you can watch somebody's playthrough as a movie with the decisions that they made, or if it's going to be just like one set, like kind of the canon story, the canon decisions of what's quote unquote supposed to happen. I don't know how that's going to work, but it's an interesting idea. But yeah, I love, all things horror. I really liked Until Dawn. I think right around when when that game came out, I was in college and I played it. I think it took me a weekend. I beat it in a weekend, maybe 2 days. And I really enjoyed it. I haven't played any of the Dark Pictures anthology games yet, but I've heard mi mixed results. I've heard some of them are not so good and some of them are really good, so yeah, I don't know. What about you, Michael? What do you think of this one?
I'm not big into horror, but Supermassive definitely has their niche. Like, they know what they're good at and they continue to do it. Kind of hoping they do something different. And yeah, it's kind of cool, the whole cinematic mode. I guess it's going to be easy for Twitch streamers to do. You know, you put
Yeah.
on cinematic mode and kick back, let your followers watch it alongside you and make comments about it, like kind of like a mystery. Well, oh, what was it? Mystery. Oh, what's that show called?
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yes, Mystery Science. Yeah, and kind of
Yeah.
do something like that. Like that'll be kind of cool.
Yeah, that is
But
cool.
on, yeah. But honestly, like that's like the coolest thing I could think of with this game.
Sure.
It's you know, it's like thinking that Treyarch or somebody's going to do something different with Call of Duty and just being like, yeah, that one slight thing is kind of cool, but is it really a whole new game? Like, it's the same thing over and over again. Like, we know what you do, what you're doing. But I like the cinematic mode. That sounds very interesting to me. Although I also don't get the cluster of bringing in seven other people. Like, man, that's gonna be a cluster to deal with, and I'm interested in seeing how that's handled in the game.
Yeah, I can see it being like kind of a niche feature where, if you have seven really good friends, that might be a good way to, kind of connect with them. Or it could also be, like you were saying, something that Twitch streamers could kind of latch on to where, if you donate a certain amount of money, you can be in on this, this Let's play or this stream of this game, and you could actually like steer the stream, something like that. I can see happening in the future, but to be honest, I don't know if this game is really gonna catch on a whole lot with the Twitch streaming, crowd. But it always could, but I don't really see it. The one thing that I will say is I watched the announcement trailer. God, I don't know if it's actual in-game, if they use pre-rendered graphics for the announcement trailer or if it was in-game, but it looks absolutely beautiful. The actors look not quite photorealistic, but much, much better than, Until Dawn, which makes sense because that game came out 7 years ago now, 6 years, six, seven, 8 years ago now. So that's something that you would expect at this point. But yeah, it looks beautiful. It's got some cool ideas. Something that I might check out for sure.
Okay, and I know you see, remember you said like Sony probably owns IP for Until Dawn.
Yeah.
This one, the quarry is actually being published by 2K.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Sony hasn't bought Supermassive Games. Like, I don't know. Do you think like with the way that they're able to like push graphics, like you'd want them on your side, like, hey, I don't know what engine you're using, I don't know what engine they've been using, but it's like, hey, you guys obviously have the technical know-how. And with the PS5 and our SSD, we think you got it. Like, if you guys like laser focus on like one platform, you guys could probably make the most realistic looking horror game ever made. Or probably even get them to do like a Dead by Daylight kind of multiplayer thing.
Yeah, I almost think that the relationship between Supermassive and Sony maybe was probably very much affected by the sales of Until Dawn. I don't know how much that game sold, but I can't imagine it was a whole lot. And Supermassive probably looked at that and thought, why don't we put these games on, every platform? Because it doesn't, it's interesting because it almost doesn't feel like they kind of fit into the Sony, developer slate, all the developers that they own. It's a very specific vibe that they're going for, and Supermassive is putting out games that seem, I would call them double A. They're not quite indie in feeling, but they're not quite triple A, but they occupy, an interesting niche, and I think because of that, just financially, they need to put these games on as many platforms as possible to reach as big of an audience as possible, because the audience for these games feels kind of limited in comparison with what else Sony owns.
I can see that. I can see why Sony would probably just go over them, like when you say it like that. Although, man, again, it seems like Supermassive would be like the one studios that Sony would probably want to pick up for something like, oh, hey, we want to make a horror game. What developer do we have? Like, you don't really have one. It's like, hey, remember how we got Metal Gear Solid? Well, remember how Resident Evil used to be like a PlayStation thing? Well, why don't we go back to doing something like that? We can make our own like horror game exclusive thing to like kind of like push the PlayStation 5 for other fans that aren't just fans of their solid third person story driven games. Like, yeah, I don't
Sure.
know. It could have been something different. But yeah, I get what you're saying. I guess with waning sales, probably with their past title or two, I see Sony being like, well, yeah, we kind of don't want to move forward with this.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying about, it would be actually a really interesting idea if Sony kind of pushed the horror subgenre. Because that seems like a niche that itself isn't really being filled all too much, or it's not really cared about that much by either, Microsoft or Nintendo, of course, or Sony at this point. There's some good horror games coming out, but it's not doesn't seem to be the focus of the industry in a way that at one point it maybe used to be with games like Silent Hill and Resident Evil, like you're saying.
Yeah, but when did they say the game come out? June 10th, which is supposed
Yeah.
to. Supermassive loves waiting until like they're absolutely sure when they're gonna release their games, because they
This game
always
is
seem
coming
to.
out.
Yeah, like they love saying like, "Hey, remember us? Oh yeah, you got to. Yeah, we have another game like in 2 weeks. Wait, whoa, whoa, that's not a. Why? It's like, yeah, don't worry about it. Just buy. Just. Doesn't this game look cool? Yes, it does. All right, well, it's coming real soon. Rather than them just, well, no, they teased their next game at the end of their original games. Because I remember I was watching a friend who was streaming one of their games. I forget which one. It could have been Until Dawn. And at the end, they teased the anthology. So I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. They kind of like they let you they go their own way. They do their own thing when it comes to announcing their games. It's like, hey, we know what we're doing in the future. We're doing multiple games. We'll tease it at the end of this game to get you excited, rather than just having like a stupid cliffhanger and being like, you might get a sequel. Instead, it's like, hey, we know what we're gonna do next. Here you go. So I've always appreciated that, but man, they love dropping dates like not even a year away. Just like, hey, you got 2 months to get ready.
Yeah, I think this game I'm gonna check out. I have Game Pass now, and I have a PC that can probably run this game just fine. So, I think maybe one weekend, I'll just kind of chill out and go through this game. That's the great thing about like Supermassive games. I don't know about the Dark Pictures anthology games, but I think it's this way, as it is with Until Dawn, which is just like the games are pretty short and sweet, like 8 to 10 to 12 hours, somewhere in that range, which is just, a great weekend game. The palate cleanser, I guess.
Yeah, I can see people doing it for like a quick horror night or something, like something that when you're in the mood, which is
Yeah.
kind of great. But I'll tell you who's not in a good mood: Grand Theft Auto fans. Because you see, Grand Theft Auto 5 has finally dropped its next gen update, I guess, because you can't call it a remaster. And it has come to some mixed receptions. It's been released and it's being and it's getting shat on, okay? If you're on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, GTA 5 is getting shat on. We aren't going to go into a full review roundup or even a reception roundup here. But basically, some people think this is a great port to the next gen or current gen. We should say actually, but they still let the market as next gen upgrades. For its exceptional load times and its bump up performance, like in resolutions and frames, with other things, the next gen upgrade isn't enough to justify paying for Grand Theft Auto 5 again, and I am one of them. I have a PlayStation 5, and I am not willing to spend $10 to play Grand Theft Auto 5 with slightly better resolution. And no, I don't care about Grand Theft Auto 5 online. But anyway, speaking of the prices, because man, if you're on Xbox, that $20 gotta sting. Because, ooh boy. Grand Theft Auto 5 on next gen isn't that simple. For starters, people can purchase two versions of the game. One has both the campaign and online, and the other version has Grand Theft Auto Online separately by itself. To buy either version, oh, that was pretty loud. To buy either version, you will need to do so through the Microsoft Store or the PlayStation Store. On PlayStation 5, the full version of Grand Theft Auto 5, as I mentioned before, is $10 until June 14th. After June 14th, the game will cost 40 bucks. And if you're playing on the PlayStation 5 and just want to play Grand Theft Auto Online, you're in luck because as of now, until June 14th, Grand Theft Auto Online only is going to be free. So for the first 3 months or 2.5 months or so, Grand Theft Auto Online will be free. So if you're interested in playing it and you're on the PlayStation 5, you can download it sooner rather than later, and you'll never have to pay for Grand Theft Auto Online. After June 14th, Grand Theft Auto Online only version will cost $20. So if you just want online, you can get it free right now on PlayStation 5. But if you don't get it before June 14th, you will be spending $20 to get Grand Theft Auto Online only. And it's worse for Xbox players, as they can buy the full version for $20 right now until June 14th. After that date, the price will go up to $40, just like the PlayStation 5 version. As for Grand Theft Auto Online for Xbox Series X, unfortunately, that is not free. Apparently, a lot of people think that is a deal between Sony and Rockstar. It's a marketing ploy. I can't really call, I shouldn't call it a ploy. It's a marketing partnership between Sony and Rockstar, because the game will cost $10 from now until June 14th. After the 14th, the game will cost $20. And that's for Grand Theft Auto Online only. So it'll be bumped up to the same price as the PS5 version. So we can talk about a lot of things here, from the game's reception so far to its convoluted prices. So, Riley, you take a pick. What do you make of Grand Theft Auto 5 coming out on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X and S, and the very, very silly marketing, I'm sorry, silly pricing that Rockstar has?
Yeah, I don't really have much to say about this game, other than the fact that I was just thinking about this today as I was looking at the show notes, that this game is nearly 10 years old, which is insane, and we're still talking about it, and it's still making, like a big splash, and, people aren't super happy with the next gen versions. They're not as nice as some people would want them to be. And of course, the pricing is really convoluted and doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But
Right.
I was just thinking, like, when I originally played Grand Theft Auto 5, I was 17 years old, and now I am 26. So that is kind of crazy to think about.
Oh, gee, I don't even know how old I was. Let's see. Oh, I was in my 20s. Ew, gross. All right, well. Oh, wow. Man, I am not too happy about this. You're charging $40 for a 10-year-old game. Like that's absolutely ridiculous. And it's not even like, in fact, I don't even know if they do the upgrades. Like if you already have the game for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, if you can just simply upgrade it from there, like Xbox Smart Delivery, which I don't think Grand Theft Auto 5 is taking advantage of. So even if you have an Xbox Series X, S, you won't be able to use that to upgrade your game as a smart pass, smart pass, as a smart delivery deal. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's real shaky. I don't like the idea that they're charging $40 for this, and $20 a premium, well, I'm gonna say a premium price, but $20 for what's basically a free-to-play online version of the game that's just filled to the brim with all kinds of microtransactions. With their shark cards, well, actually, I think it's just the shark cards that has microtransactions, but those are not really something that's cheap. In fact, Rockstar has released Grand Theft Auto 5 like two, three times with different shark card versions of it. Like it's so weird that it's their biggest selling point that hey, Grand Theft Auto Online, and here's some shark cards that you use real world money to buy fake GTA money. It's like, wow, and you're gonna charge people $20 for this when it should be free to play at this point. So I don't really, this is definitely an EA move. I'm really, it's kind of weird to see this from Grand Theft Auto. Like, this seems like something that Grand Theft Auto would parody and make fun of.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Speaking of things that don't make sense or things that was off our radars for a long while, EA won't be having their EA Play event this year. As reported by IGN, EA won't be hosting a traditional EA Play event in 2022 in favor of revealing things throughout the year. Here's what an EA rep told IGN. We love EA Play Live as it's our way to connecting with our players and sharing what's new with all of you. However, this year things aren't lining up to show you everything on one date. We have exciting things happening at our world-class studios, and this year we'll reveal much more about these projects when the time is right for each of them. We look forward to spending time with you throughout the year. End quote. So Riley, do you even care about EA not having their honestly quite boring event this year?
Not at all. I'm not going to miss updates about FIFA and how much money they're making about with FIFA and what kind of cards they're going to add to FIFA and all this other stuff. I don't really care. I kind of think it's better to just announce things as they happen. There was a certain time when publishers and the entire industry, thought it was a good idea to show everything at once. That was more in a time when news outlets, and gaming outlets kind of wanted to get everything all at once, and we got really hyped for one specific time of the year, but that's kind of dying. And so, like, most developers, you know, like the industry as a whole seems to be moving towards just announce things as they're happening throughout the whole year. I mean, we still have Summer Games Fest and things like that, but and the Game Awards as well, which are kind of big tentpole events for throughout the year. But with especially with E3 dying and things like that, that model of okay, just this one week, the entire industry is going to be, you know, crazy. I think that's kind of dying a little bit.
I agree with you. With E3 suffering horribly, and the Game Awards being pretty much the synergy commercial show, that's basically what it is. It's basically, well, I think we talked about that from last year's show, that it's just one big synergy show.
There is a lot of commercials.
A lot of them. At least they were game focused, I guess. But yeah, EA's play event. I've watched them, and you're not missing out on anything. It's just kind of boring, to be honest, because it really is just EA showing Madden, EA showing NBA Live when it was a thing, EA showing FIFA, and EA trying to hype up their Star Wars games when they had the exclusive rights to those for a while. And they might show you a picture of a concept art of Dragon Age. It's like, wow, we. You guys sure are showing off a whole lot for a 30 to 45 minute show. Thanks for wasting my time. So honestly, I kind of hope EA does away with EA Play Event, or if they keep doing it, they change it up to where they do it like Steam's Summerfest, and where it's like, hey, EA Play Live Event for this next week or just a weekend, we're giving everybody access to our EA Play, because that would make sense. EA Play Live event. Hey, as a way to get you to see how great our EA Play subscription service is. And I think that would make way more sense than simply showing, I don't know, Brothers in Arms. Oh, not Brothers in Arms, that's a Ubisoft game. Other than showing Medal of Honor VR. It's like, oh, cool. Nobody asked for that. We want an actual game, not VR that like six people have. So I'm actually okay with this, because this just goes, at least EA is admitting that they got nothing to show, and that they probably don't have faith in too many of their games releasing on time this year, or they just don't want to tell people all of these games are coming 2023, 2024, and that would actually be real disappointing to see. So I think this was the right call from EA.
Absolutely agree.
And also the right call is for everyone to get Tunic on Xbox Game Pass, which did a shadow drop. Tunic, the Legend of Zelda-esque indie game, which I personally have been waiting on forever, because I like everything that's adorable and anything to do with foxes, and having an adorable fox that swings a sword around is the most adorable thing I could think of right now. And the game is available on Xbox Game Pass right now. Riley, you said you have Xbox Game Pass now, which means you have no excuse not to play this adorable game. I expect to hear great things from you the next time we speak on the podcast about it.
All right, fair enough.
Xbox also showed off a few other games that will be coming to Game Pass when they launch. Including, okay, here we go. Crusaders Kings 3, March 29th, 2022. Tunic, which just hit today as of this recording on Xbox Series X, S, Optimized Xbox One, Xbox Cloud Gaming, and PC. Immortality for Xbox Series X, X, and S will be hitting this summer. Trek to Yumi. Or Yomi, which was actually shown last week on the PlayStation's State of Play, will be dropping day one on Xbox Game Pass on Xbox Series XS and Xbox One in the spring of 2022. Escape Academy will be coming to the Xbox console sometime in 2022. Shredders will be coming to the Xbox Series XX Optimized, Xbox Cloud Gaming, and PC March 17th. And let's see who else. Flintlock, The Siege of Dawn on Xbox Series XS and Xbox One sometime in 2022. Floppy Nights, unknown platforms, even though since it's coming to Game Pass, we don't know if it's going to be on console or just PC, but that's coming in 2022. Paradise Killer, Xbox Series XS optimized, Xbox One, Xbox Cloud Gaming, and PC, March 16th, available now. Seriously, I got a chance to play and review Paradise Killer years ago, and to this very day, I still recommend the strange, quirky, what in the world is going on? What am I looking at? What am I doing? Detective point-and-click adventure game that you are absolutely gonna love, Riley. I really do think you're gonna enjoy that one. Some of the characters in that game are absolutely amazing, and it's a real well-written game. I highly recommend it to anybody who has Game Pass, who has not played it. I recommend it. Kraken Academy on Xbox Series XS, Xbox One, and PC on March 22nd, 2022. Beacon Pines, a game I am super excited for that I have talked about in the past. Been waiting for the game to get a release date. Unfortunately, it's still just coming soon. And Citizen Sleeper on Xbox Series XS and Xbox One, also unknown release date. Before we move back to Tunic, Riley, have you heard of Beacon Pines and Paradise Killer?
I think I've heard of Beacon Pines. I have not heard of Paradise Killer, although I just looked it up as you were talking, and the art style kind of caught my attention, so I might check it out.
Oh yes, it is absolutely amazing. Paradise Killer is just filled with so much quirky humor, and some of the characters you find are just absolutely amazing. My favorite is the goat head lady that used to be your friend, and you reconnect with them. It's all kinds of strange. I don't want to ruin it for. I don't want to spoil their relationship and how things work out for you, Riley. But I do recommend Paradise Killer. And as for Beacon Pines is another game that I just like Tunic. I have been waiting forever to play. There's a demo. I don't know if the demo is still available, but there was a demo out on Steam. It was part of one of their Summerfest games. No, it was part of an indie store games from Fellow Traveler. I'm sorry, not Steam. Fellow, well, it was on Steam, but Fellow Travelers has this indie event that they love to do that focuses on indie games that tell stories, like where like those games are story focused. And I got a chance to play Beacon Pines, I think it was a year ago. And you play as this little child thing. I forgot what he was. He might be a reindeer. I'm not.
Looks like a deer.
Yeah, he
Sorry,
might be a little deer.
not to interrupt you, Michael, but this is
No, go
the
ahead.
storybook game that we talked about a
Yes.
long time ago on the podcast.
Yes, it's one of those games that I am going to continue to talk about anytime it comes. Anytime I get a chance to talk about it, I will. But for those of you who have not heard of Beacon Pines, it's a stylish story about a little kid and his friends in a strange, mysterious little town filled with secrets. And like Riley mentioned, it has a storybook kind of deal to it, to where it looks like you're playing in a storybook, but you're also controlling the story because you can change parts of the world and parts of dialogue from characters by changing certain words in the actual story. I'm doing a poor job of explaining it, but it is definitely something that I recommend everybody check out. And getting back to Tunic finally, because I'm sure Riley would like to move on. This indie title has gotten a bit of positive buzz lately due to the positive reviews. I am still working on my review. I know I brought it up multiple times that I'm working on the review for this game. But what do you make of the game hitting Game Pass? And are you excited for anything on the list that we just mentioned?
I am excited to try out Tunic. I mean, just like you, this is a game that I've been waiting for a long time. I looked up actually today to see when the game was announced, and it seems like it was announced in 2018, although I could have swore, I'm probably wrong about this. This is probably a memory that I just made up, but I could have swore that it was shown with the when they first unveiled the Nintendo Switch. I don't know if that's true or not. I have not gone back and looked at that, the 2017, or was it late 2016 stream where they announced the Switch and all that. But The first official like E3 announcement that I saw for it was all the way back in 2018, so been waiting 4 years at least for this game. And it was a game that's always kind of been in the back of my mind, kind of like, has that game released yet? What's going on with that game? You know, it's one that I never really forgot about. And so, yeah, now that I have Game Pass, I'm really interested to play it. Michael, just what are your quick thoughts on the game? This seems like a game that's tailor-made for you.
I think the character definitely is. But I'm glad you said that because I could have sworn we've heard about this game back in 2016.
Yeah.
Like I thought it was 2016. It was one of those games that will pop up every now and again when Xbox does their indie developer focus kind of deals. But it was
Yeah.
always during the sizzle reel. There was never like a full blown like showing of the game. So like you, I was always like, man, this game better not get forgotten because every now and again I'd forget that Tunic is a thing, or maybe it was a fever dream or something. Like, I don't know what's going on here. From what I can tell you right now, Tunic is actually a little harder than you might think. Like,
Sure.
it's really strange. I'm not gonna lie, I thought it would be a game that you can breeze through because I thought it was gonna be more relaxing. But it's a bit more strategic, especially when you have to go up against bosses. I wouldn't really say it's Souls-like because everybody likes to say anything that's hack and slash and challenging is Souls-like. But it's not as, oh man, I guess not as light and free-flowing as The Legend of Zelda, you know? Like
Sure.
when you swipe The Legend of Zelda, it kind of feel like quick swipes. But in Tunic, it feels a little slower, I guess, because like you're a tiny little fox with tiny little paws swinging a sword around. But the controls are nice, and the game is just nice to look at. It doesn't try too hard to be cartoony. It doesn't too hard to be sweet. It's an adorable looking game with creatures that aren't scary, but they look like scary monsters. And the level designs, for an indie game, they're pretty much what you expect. There's nothing really stand out about them, but I do recommend playing Tunic, especially if you have Game Pass. I think you can't go wrong with Tunic on Game Pass, and I'm playing it on PC, mind you. So I haven't played it on Xbox. I played it on PC, and I think it's enjoyable. I actually can't wait to hear what you say about it because I think we can actually do like a deep dive discussion for Tunic like
For
next
sure.
week or whatever. Seeing how you and I were both like waiting on this game and wondering what was going on with it to see if it actually lives up, not to the hype because there was no hype for it really. But if
There
it
was hype to me, damn it.
I was hyped for like the first couple of years and I was like, oh, no, this game is going to disappoint, isn't it? But so far, it's not disappointing me.
It did feel like a fever dream, like, hey, what's going on with that Fox game? What's going on? And then at one point, I think the first time I saw it, it was just a little tiny video, and I was like, oh, what's that? And I don't even think it had a name attached to it, or it might have had a name in the, like the lower corner that they do sometimes during those sizzle reels, like you were talking about. And then somebody, I don't even remember when this was or who it was somebody said that it was like a Legend of Zelda-esque, and I actually, have a question about that. In what way is it Legend of Zelda like? Is it like you're going through different areas of the game and picking up different, items that you can use throughout the rest of the game? Is it like that?
Yeah, it's pretty much a
Okay.
love letter to Legend of Zelda, other than the little
Sure.
fox in the tunic, like
Right.
Link. It goes through some of the same beats, light puzzle solving, collecting items in order to advance,
Yeah.
interesting boss fights that you have to like kind of figure out how you're gonna get through them with what you have. And it's just it's, it just has this cute fairy tale like story and charm to it that it's not full blown Legend of Zelda, but it's definitely like somebody who grew up with Legend of Zelda, but not like the newer stuff. Like we were talking about, well, you were, I don't think you were in that episode. We were talking about Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, but someone who grew up with like the original Legend of Zelda
Link
and
to the
Legend of Zelda
Past.
2 and whatnot. Yeah. Like
Yeah.
it's somebody who grew up in that time and kind of wants to go back to there. It's a big nostalgia trip with modern day kind of feel to it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to play it because A Link to the Past is one of my favorite games of all time. So, if it's like that kind of design, I'm definitely sure that I'll be super into this game.
Yeah, it has a mixture of the old and the new. So you won't get completely linked to the past, but you definitely like feel it and you definitely
Sure.
see it. But
Absolutely.
it tries to do its own thing too. So like it has its own identity, but it's definitely kind of like those Metroidvania games. You can tell that it's a love letter and it's inspired by those and it's people who enjoyed those kind of games.
Yeah.
But it still feels like its own game in that genre. I think Tunic also fits in that kind of realm.
Very cool. Yeah, I can't wait to check it out. Probably check it out tonight, actually, after we're done recording.
Oh, I definitely recommend it. It's fun. It can be a little frustrating at times because if you make a mistake, the game makes you pay for it.
Well, I don't know if anybody told you this, Michael, but I'm a fan of Souls games, so I think I'll be okay. Or
What?
at least understanding.
I don't believe you. You don't like soul games. I don't think we've ever heard you talk about those things.
No, I just like games with some soul.
Oh man. Well, speaking of souls, you ever wonder what's out there, Riley, if we're the only ones here?
Sometimes.
Well, Todd Howard and company also thinks that, and this was a terrible segue, and I apologize, everybody. But Starfield, we know absolutely nothing about it.
Yeah.
Everybody's hyped for it though, because that's kind of cool. This is like what the first game in 15 years or something, that Todd Howard and company has done something. I keep saying that, Bethesda has done something completely different, like a new IP. I think somebody, I think that was the big deal was like
Yeah.
it's been almost 2 decades since they did something that's not Fallout.
Yeah.
But Bethesda recently released a new video. I hate that we said this. It's a dev diary, but yeah. Bethesda recently released a new video on Starfield where game director Todd Howard, design director, oh gosh darn it, Emil Plagarulo, Pag. Paglier, oh my goodness, Mr. Emil. I'm just gonna say Mr. Emil. Lead quest designer Will Sheen, and lead artist Estevan Paley. I think I should be banned from doing names in these episodes. But all these leads talked about a variety of different aspects of the game, from companions to factions. I will leave a link to the video in the description along with an excellent write-up from IGN describing some of the key points. Let's talk about factions first. Will Sheen talked about three of the main factions in the game, and this is what he had to say. Quote, "We always make a bunch of different groups that represent some of the major factions in every game. And in this one, we've got the United Colonies that represents the future of Space Republic Adelaide. You also have the Freestar Collective, which is a space Western fantasy, people that are out there on the frontier. And we've got Ryujin Industries, which represents corporate life." Unquote. Those aren't the only factions, though, as Starfield also has a faction called the Crimson Fleet, which basically sounds like space pirates and villainous faction. But with that said, the team mentioned that you could still be a good player and side with the Crimson Fleet. Starfield will have companions. It is a Bethesda RPG after all, and furthermore, Todd Howard says that the game harkens back to some of the older hardcore RPGs. I think they mention Skyrim, or not Skyrim, but Morrowind, in their videos, or at least one of the di or how they handle dialogue. It's nice with Starfield to go back to some things we didn't do. The backgrounds, the traits, defining your character, all those stats. There are so many games that do these things that people are ready for something that does a lot of those things that older hardcore RPGs, some that we used to do, and doing those again in a new way. Again, we'll leave the link in the video description. And if you're someone looking forward to Starfield, we definitely recommend checking it out. It has plenty of information on there, and it is kind of cool to see the devs come together and talk about what they're working on and seeing the pride that they have in the features that they're adding into the game. But Starfield is scheduled to release exclusively via Xbox Series X, S, and PC on November 11th, 2022. 11/11/22. And it will be on Game Pass on day one. With that being said, with our main topic this week, we do want to get into all things Starfield because, well, there's a lot of things to discuss, both promising and worrisome. So we're going to go through these things one at a time because we do have a few things that we can talk about. Riley, what did you make of the dev video on factions and companions? It sounds like classic Elder Scrolls and Fallout together, which is sure to make a lot of people happy.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds cool. It's hard to get excited for factions and companions because that's part of every Bethesda game. It's kind of hard to get entirely excited about it. And actually, one of the things that I wanted to mention is one of these developers said something that kind of struck me as interesting. And I saw this on Twitter, and I didn't take much notice of it outside of the context of the video, but watching the video, they say that you can join the Crimson Pirates and still be a good person, right? Like you can work from the inside, right? Kind of like a private detective taking down this pirate organization, which is a cool idea. But I think what that harkens to for me is that the developers definitely have an idea in their mind of who is a quote good moral faction and who is a bad moral faction, right, in this world. Which fair enough, but to me, what makes games and factions interesting actually is if the developers don't present you with these factions as, this one's good and this one's bad, but rather that these are just factions that exist, both, all of which have good things and bad things to them. I like games where, the factions exist in a gray kind of area, and it's completely up to the player to kind of define their own morality and, how they want to play. Like nobody wants to be a bad person, but I might just want to go play with the pirates because I think the space cops are kind of dumb, and I also think that the corporation is kind of dumb, right? Like. And to be fair, like that level of gray, just like real life, could exist in the game, right? And they might just be presenting it poorly in this video, but that's something that I wanted to take mention of. I don't really have much else to say about it. There's factions. You've got the corporation. You've got kind of the Westerner kind of vibe, and then you've got kind of the space cop vibe, and then the space pirate vibe, which is cool. I don't really have much more to say about it than that.
Yeah, I agree with you on the whole factions thing. It's like, when you do that moral gray line or however you want to say it, doesn't really work in these games. It always feels like pre-calculated and robotic in a way. It's like I don't it never really seems to like affect much of what you're doing. It's like, oh, you might get some new dialogue changes or maybe you won't be able to get this weapon because this faction is the one that has it and they don't trust you. It never really seems like my morality decisions truly makes a difference. And even with the way that they're talking about it still kind of sounds samey to me. It's like, okay, you're doing factions because you're Bethesda, Fallout and And Elder Scrolls, they have factions. Like it's a Bethesda thing. They have to have factions in their games. It's like Ubisoft and Assassin's Creed. I don't know where I'm going with that. They only have two factions in Assassin's Creed anyway. Like you expect it. Like there's like, oh, we have factions that's not gonna do much. It's like I don't understand the point of picking a certain faction, because no matter what, your missions are all going to be the same. And I think that's the biggest problem with factions. It's like you're going to do the same missions only with a slightly different faction who might have something slightly different to say. Like none of it actually challenges the player to actually be a good person or whatever, because by then we already know what we're going to do. I'm going to be the evil asshole. I'm going to be the good angelic person who helps everybody. And I don't really, and they say like, oh, it sounds like classic. I mean, we're like, oh, it's classic Elder Scrolls and Fallout. I never really liked those factions either. And I don't think I'm gonna enjoy this one. I think it's just another feature to check off. Okay, so Starfield is also using a new engine called the Creation Engine 2. Well, it's a brand new engine, I guess. I mean, to be fair, we haven't seen anything from the engine, except for that one teaser with the robot companion. But yeah, should we even be excited that they have a new engine? Because remember, Fallout 76 was supposed to be like 16 times better in resolution and details or whatever. It's like I don't know what Fallout 76 was using, but this is Fallout and Elder Scrolls games never looked that good to me, to be honest. So I don't really know how anybody can be excited for Creation Engine 2. It's like, what are you gonna add ray tracing to it? Is it do better frame rates? Like, what is it about this engine that we should be excited for?
Yeah, I think it's some ways for me, just on an industry level. I think this is the first game that they've done with a new engine in years and years and years and years. And it's always been a critique of, Bethesda games, Bethesda developed games, that is, that they're quite buggy and, like you were saying, they don't look super good. And so I think it's interesting just to see, what the future of Bethesda games could be. Although, to be honest, I can't really see it being that much different than Fallout or Elder Scrolls. It might look a little better, look a little more polished, but I'm not expecting any huge leaps in graphical fidelity or any huge gameplay changes, design changes, or anything like that. So, hopefully the game will look a little better and run a little smoother, and have less bugs, as a result. But I'm not expecting m like a completely different type of game, I guess is what I'm saying. I basically know what to expect, like kind of what we were touching on earlier.
Yeah, I don't. I'm with you. I wonder how exciting the bugs are going to be with this new engine. Like that's always been everybody's like favorite thing with Bethesda, which is kind of weird and sad. Like the most thing you're looking forward to is, oh boy, I can't wait to see what kind of hilarious bugs are in there. But hopefully, Creation Engine 2 also has a better way of handling itself. All right, so what do you think? Oh, I'm sorry. When do you think we'll start to see actual gameplay?
Well, that's an interesting question. We haven't seen gameplay yet, which is kind of concerning because the game is supposed to come out at the end of the year. I think maybe my prediction is that we won't see any gameplay this year and that the game will not be coming out this year. That's kind of my gut feeling on it, but if it is supposed to come out by the end of the year, then like they say it is, right? They set a date and everything. Then yeah, I would expect sometime summer this year, or maybe even a little bit earlier, I'm not sure, to start seeing gameplay.
I saw that some people were saying that summer of this year is when we'll see. So maybe at E, maybe during E3. Man, I think it'll be like close to fall by the time we see actual gameplay.
Yeah, whew.
And I don't know, like so far, every time they update everybody, it's always concept art. Like you can't even show like a screenshot of how the game is looking so far. And
Yeah.
everybody's like, oh my gosh, this looks so good. It's like it's a picture. It's not even like the game. It's a concept art.
Right.
But I predict so. I mean, I predict close to fall. I say close to fall.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Let's see. Lastly, we are a pretty upbeat podcast, so let's close the segment on a bright note. This game has some huge expectations attached to it. It's not just the next big game from Bethesda. In fact, no, it's not the next huge Bethesda game. Because let's face it, from the way that you were talking about this game and how expansive it was, this is going to be their next huge game. It also has a major Xbox console exclusive. What does the game have to do for it to meet expectations in your eyes, Riley? And by expectation, I mean both the wider general player base and yourself.
Well, that's interesting. I don't really know. I don't have a lot of personal expectations on this game, and I'm not sure that the rest of the industry has. There's a lot of hype for the game, but I don't know what kind of expectations there are for the game because, like myself, I think the industry, like everybody who plays games kind of knows what they're getting with a Bethesda game. And so I think basically to meet expectations, it needs to be Fallout, but look a little better and be in space. And if it does that, I don't think people are going to be too upset. And it's coming out on Game Pass, I'll probably play it.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's actually going to be the biggest way I play it. I'm definitely playing it on Game Pass. Hopefully, I'll have an Xbox Series X by then. Like, sure, I can buy an S, but I don't want the S, I want the X. So, hopefully, I will have it by then. But, man, I just want to see some kind of gameplay. I have absolutely no expectations for this game. Not because it's Bethesda, but because I want to know what the big deal is. I want to know what Bethesda is doing with the Xbox Series X, new RTX powered game cards. I want to see how they push themselves beyond Fallout and Elder Scrolls, because honestly, I really do like Elder Scrolls, despite like the way I've been sounding. I do enjoy Elder Scrolls, and I still like Fallout 3 and 4. I think 3 might have been my favorite, but I still like 3 and 4. So I have no expectations for them right now. Because I don't want to be let down when they actually show something for the game. But as for general audiences, in order for this game to meet expectation, graphically speaking, it has to be the best looking game Bethesda has ever released. And I'm not talking about just, oh, the game looks pretty. No, I'm like, the animation has to look better. No more of those deadpan eyes, all the AI does when they look at you and they talk to you. The morality system that they're going on about, it has to actually affect something. It has to do something. Player creation has to be top notch. Like it, but that's the games have never. Well, yeah, they've never really had the best character creation deal out there. So I think they're gonna need a deeper character creation, and with a new engine. Everybody's going to expect your game to be able to do more than your previous engine. They're going to want better effects, especially since you're doing a space, and they're going to want every planet and every station they go to look different enough and unique enough to where they feel like they've traveled somewhere new and different. And of course, NPCs. This game is going to be filled to the brim with NPCs. For expectations to be met, Starfield has to have. I'm sorry, it's gonna have to go the Mass Effect route. It's gonna have to have interesting extraterrestrial characters, all with like their own history and background. And I think that's what everybody's expecting from Starfield. They want this to be Bethesda's Mass Effect. Mass Effect meets Fallout. And I think that's a heavy burden to bear. But I think that's the expectation this game's gonna have to meet.
Wow, big expectations. I don't think you're wrong about all that.
All right, so with that said, and you now all know our expectations and what we think the game will need to do to meet expectations, which I think I might have laid it on kind of thick, but honestly, with this generation of gaming, you have to go big now. You can't just half-ass it. You have to go all the way. And if when you watch the video and you hear how they talk about their game, it sounds like they're aiming for that, and it sounds like they're very ambitious in what they're doing. And they seem proud of it. They seem like they know what they're doing, and they're making strides to take this new engine and push it as far as they can. And I can respect that.
Yeah, for sure.
So with that said, Riley, what are you playing?
Yeah, so I've basically kind of been going through Game Pass. I've started playing Wasteland 3, which is an interesting pick. It's basically a tactical strategy CRPG. And apparently, Wasteland was a very influential game back in the day for the first couple Fallout games, which is funny that we're talking about, Bethesda and everything, even though Bethesda didn't create Fallout initially. It's just interesting that connection. But yeah, the DNA of Fallout, you can definitely see in Wasteland, at least Wasteland 3. And I don't know about the other games, so I'd be interested to see how much Fallout influence, like how much Wasteland influenced Fallout originally, and then after that, after Fallout got huge, how much Fallout then re-influenced the later installments in the Wasteland series. But yeah, the Wasteland games, this Wasteland game, I can't say anything about the others, seems cool. Basically, it's grid combat. It's based on an action economy system, kind of like older computer RPGs, where every member of your squad has a certain number of action points. You can spend those action points to do different things, usually, moving around, shooting a gun, throwing grenades, doing all sorts of weird things. And you have a squad of four rangers and two companions that you can take with you on missions. And you kind of want to fill out your squad with different abilities, whether that be, the ability to hack things, lockpick. The great thing, the interesting thing about this game, is that you're not just controlling one character's stats, you're controlling a whole squad of stats. So I tried to go with the first two people that I picked, because when you first start the game, you start with two people, and then you get more. You build out your squad after that first mission. I tried to go for people that, had a good range of melee combat, long range combat, lock picking, hacking. If there's hacking and lock picking in a game, or bartering, or things like that, I will definitely go for those options, because if there is a lock, I want to pick it. If there's a computer, I want to hack it in every single video game. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. Put a couple hours into that. That's basically all I've been playing, except for Elden Ring. But we talked to Elden Ring to death last week, so I don't really have any other thoughts on it. But yeah.
Okay, I haven't tried Wasteland 3 only because I'm gonna punch myself. And I was thinking about I'm gonna go back and play Wasteland 1 and 2. I've never played this series before, and I looked at them, I was like, ooh, they're old school. Okay, I'm gonna get stomped out here because I'm terrible at those kind of games.
I love it though. I love that old school system, because I'm a big board game nerd, and it just feels like, okay, this makes sense to me now.
See, I always hate it when the game dictates if I was doing well or not. That always bothered me. But that sounds cool. That actually sounds fun. I actually want to try it out now. I might skip one and two because I keep telling someone to play it. And then I look at it, I'm like, oh God, no, I'm going to die. So I'm like, yeah,
Yeah,
I'm good.
I think they remastered Wasteland right before the first Wasteland, right before Wasteland 3 came out, but I don't think you really need to know. I think you can jump into Wasteland 3 without much prior knowledge. It's basically Fallout. There was a nuclear war, there's factions out there, and you can have different skills and do different things. To me, the lore doesn't matter all that much. I get it.
Okay, because I was still making my way through Mutant Year Zero: Road to Eden. Have you played that one?
No, I've never even heard of that game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I think you like it.
Is that a Game Pass joint?
Oh my goodness. I want to say yes. No, I think it used to be on there.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I'll have to check it out.
It's called Mutant Year Zero. It's actually based off the I think it's a pen and paper game.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, as you said that and you mentioned that, it's like, oh yeah, that reminded me of Mutant Year Zero. I think that might actually be your jam too. You're gonna be busy with all kinds of games now that you have Game Pass.
That's true. Whatever I feel like playing.
We're gonna come back and be like, Riley, what are you playing? Oh man, I'm playing something completely new this week.
That's
I don't
right.
know. Like, do you ever finish your game? I don't finish my games. Like, do you ever finish your games? Absolutely not.
No, I just get a craving for a specific taste, and Game Pass will cater to that.
Which I think is why so many people love, including me, because I recently started playing, well, I recently finished Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was on Game Pass. I was like, oh, sure, I'll give it a try. I was interested in the game, and the only reason I did not buy it was because Avengers left such a sour taste in my mouth, and I feel
Sure.
bad for not supporting. I think it was Montreal who did this one.
Yeah, I know it's Montreal.
Yeah, if we're not supporting this game, and I was like, oh my goodness, that sucks. So, in order to show my support, I liked the game. It was a good game. It has some game-ruining bugs for me. There was a couple times where the game froze, and
Yeah.
there was even some times where during the final boss, the control stopped working on me, and nothing's more frustrating than your controls refusing to work when you're on a final boss.
Yeah, that sounds very, very annoying.
It is. It was terrible because I don't know if I mentioned this, but I only have an Xbox One X. I don't have a Series X yet. And the load times on that One X is horrendously bad. So every time the control would mess up on me on the final boss and I died, I would have to wait forever for that loading screen to just end. And there was one point to where I think it actually froze while loading. I'm not really sure about that. I was too frustrated when I just quit out the game and I stopped playing for a while. But with that said, it's not too long and it's not too short. Like, it doesn't outstay its welcome. It comes in, it tells the stories, you have some good laughs, and you move on. It's like, oh, this is great. I am actually going to go out and purchase the oh man, I forgot they have a special edition of the game, and I'm actually going to get the physical edition of it just so I can show my support for the game. But with that said, I am currently playing Tunic. That's right, for my review, I'm playing Tunic now, the game we were talking about today. And I'm sure Riley will talk about Tunic next week if she's not too busy with Wasteland and Years and Mutant Year Zero. And Wasteland 2 and Wasteland Extromeda or whatever other wasteland they have out there. So with that said, Riley, what are you working on and where can we find you?
I'm not working on much, just working on this show. You can find me on Twitter at Logue, Logue underscore Riley, Riley. You can also find me in our Discord server.
You can find me on Twitter at M underscore MOSLEY underscore JR. If you find a widow on a fox hoodie, congratulations, you are in the right place. And I am currently working on Tunic, as I've been saying for like the past 3 weeks. Like, it seems like every episode we come to for like the past month, I've been saying like I'm working on Tunic and Fix Fox, which you can find my preview of those on at Bagel Games. All right. You mentioned our Discord earlier. You all should definitely go over there, check out Riley's stuff. She's willing to talk to everybody. I'm too shy. I'm joking. I will actually talk to you all. You can find us on our Discord, which is the best way to get in touch with us for now. And please consider dropping us a rating. Don't drop our rating, but like, give us a good rating. We would like that. Not the drop rating thing. That would make us sad. When you give us a rating, it helps us out tremendously. And finally, check out thenerdstash.com. There you can find news in the world of gaming, movies, and television, along with awesome reviews, opinion pieces, lists, guides, and so much more, including this awesome podcast that you're listening to. And with that, I would like to thank Riley for joining me, and thank you all for listening in. We truly appreciate you taking your time to listen to us gobble on about a whole lot of nothing, especially me. I go on for too long, which is why Riley should start hosting these shows now, but I keep volunteering. We'll both be back next week to talk about some more gaming news and probably even Tunic.